A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know, Korn, this whole show runs on GPU compute, and we wouldn't be here without Modal.
Seriously. And that's what powers all our text-to-speech. Everything you're hearing right now.
They're an AI infrastructure platform. Developers use them to run GPU workloads in the cloud with zero infrastructure headache.
If you're building anything with AI, check them out. Modal.com. Daniel sent us this one, and it's a genuinely practical problem. You're out, you're on your phone, you want your AI agent to pull data from an Israeli website, say a utility bill portal or a government procurement page, and the site is geo-restricted, probably for security reasons, and it's running Cloudflare Turnstile or Perimeter X on top of that. The proposed fix, run an MCP server on your home workstation, tunnel it out via Tailscale or a Cloudflare tunnel, so your mobile agent can call it remotely, and all the egress traffic comes from your residential IP. The questions are which MCP tool actually fits that architecture, what the real trade-offs are between Playwright, Puppeteer, Firecrawl-style approaches, and vision-based scraping, and whether this whole setup is basically just run Playwright somewhere with your home IP, with an MCP label on it.
Which is a fair question to ask, honestly. Because there's a version of this where the MCP framing is doing real work architecturally, and there's a version where it's just a very elaborate way of saying ISSH into my home machine and run a browser.
The answer is probably somewhere uncomfortable in the middle. But before we get there, by the way, today's script is courtesy of Claude Sonnet 4.6, doing its usual thing.
Solid instincts on technical topics.
It has opinions about Playwright, apparently. The reason this question is interesting right now is that the bot protection landscape has shifted pretty dramatically. Proxyway published a breakdown of MCP servers for web scraping recently, and the picture they paint is that over 70% of Israeli websites are now running some form of advanced bot protection. Cloudflare Turnstile, Perimeter X, Akamai Bot Manager, these aren't your grandfather's CIPC. They're doing behavioral fingerprinting, TLS fingerprint analysis, canvas rendering checks. The gap between I have a residential IP and I can actually get the data I need has widened considerably.
Right, and that's the thing people underestimate. The residential IP is necessary but not sufficient. It solves the geo-restriction layer, and it gets you past the most naive IP reputation checks, but the fingerprinting happens at a completely different level. Cloudflare Turnstile specifically is doing a passive challenge by default. It's watching how your browser renders, how your mouse moves if there is one, what your TLS handshake looks like. A headless Chromium with default settings will fail the even from a residential IP in Tel Aviv.
The IP gets you in the door, and then the browser fingerprint is what gets you thrown back out.
And that's why the choice of MCP tool actually matters, rather than this being a trivially solved problem. Because different tools address the fingerprinting layer in completely different ways, or in some cases, don't address it at all, and just hope the residential IP is enough.
Which brings us to the architecture question. The home workstation, Tailscale, or Cloudflare tunnel, MCP server sitting on your LAN. Walk me through why that's the right mental model here before we get into which tool fits it.
The core insight is about where the egress happens. If you're running an AI agent on your phone or on a cloud service, any HTTP request that agent makes is going to come from a data center IP. And data center IPs are flagged immediately by every serious bot protection system. Bright Data, which is one of the bigger residential proxy providers, claims a 99.95% success rate with their residential network. And that number is partly meaningful because it's the baseline you're comparing against when you're coming from a data center IP and getting blocked constantly.
The whole point of the home workstation setup is that your residential IP is the proxy, essentially. You're not paying for a proxy service, you're being your own proxy.
You're being your own proxy, yes. And there are real advantages to that beyond cost. Your home IP has genuine history. It's been used for normal browsing. It shows up in legitimate traffic patterns. It's associated with an ISP that serves residential customers in your area. That's hard to fake convincingly even with a commercial residential proxy network, because those IPs are still rotating through pools that sophisticated bot managers have started to recognize.
Though the commercial networks have gotten pretty good, Oxylabs and Bright Data are both sitting on over 150 million residential IPs across 195 plus countries. That's not a small pool to fingerprint.
No, it's not. And for most use cases, a commercial residential proxy is fine. The home workstation architecture makes more sense in specific scenarios. You need a consistent identity over time, you're dealing with a site that tracks returning visitors, or you're working with something like a utility portal, where you're actually the legitimate account holder and you want the scraper to look exactly like you browsing from home.
Which is the scenario Daniel is describing, more or less. This isn't adversarial scraping of a competitor's product catalog. It's more like, I have a legitimate reason to access this data. I just want an agent to do it for me.
That distinction matters when we get to the legal and ethical side of this. But first, the tools.
Let's actually answer the question.
The rise in bot protection on Israeli sites specifically is worth pausing on for a second, because it's not just the global trend toward Cloudflare adoption. There's a security dimension here that's more acute than you'd find on, say, a Dutch e-commerce site. Government portals, utility infrastructure, municipal services, these have been explicit targets. So the aggressive posture isn't paranoia, it's a reasonable response to an elevated threat environment.
Which means the tools defending those sites are tuned more aggressively than average. A Cloudflare configuration that works fine for a retail site in Germany might be cranked up several notches on an Israeli government procurement portal.
And that's the context for why Daniel's architecture, home workstation, Tailscale or Cloudflare Tunnel, MCP server on the LAN, is actually a thoughtful starting point rather than overkill. The tunnel piece is doing one job, it's giving the mobile agent a stable, authenticated path to call the server sitting on your home network. Tailscale is probably the cleaner option for most people here because it handles the NAT traversal without requiring you to open ports or manage certificates. Cloudflare Tunnel is fine too, but it adds a hop through Cloudflare's infrastructure, which introduces some irony when you're trying to sneak past Cloudflare on the other end.
That is a funny architectural situation.
Your egress is still residential either way, so it doesn't break the approach. But Tailscale keeps the path more direct. The agent on your phone talks to the MCP server on your workstation. The workstation makes the request. Everything looks like normal residential traffic from your home ISP.
The MCP layer on top of that is what lets the agent actually drive the browser rather than just issuing raw HTTP requests.
That's the real value of the MCP framing. It's not just tunneling, it's giving the agent a structured interface to say, navigate to this URL, wait for this element, extract this field. Without that, you're back to writing custom automation scripts. The MCP server abstracts the browser control into something the agent can reason about. But of course, the quality of that abstraction depends heavily on the implementation.
Right. And that's where things get tricky. Which tool actually does that well? Because structured interface to browser control describes a pretty wide range of implementations with very different performance characteristics against real bot protection.
Right, so let's actually map the landscape. You've got roughly three categories. First is Playwright-based MCP, either the official Microsoft Playwright MCP or wrappers built on top of it. Second is something like Firecrawl, which is a managed service with its own MCP integration that handles the browser layer for you. Third is vision-based approaches, where instead of parsing the DOM, you're essentially screenshotting the page and having a model interpret what it sees.
Those three are not interchangeable. They're solving different problems.
Very different problems. Playwright MCP is the most powerful and the most fragile. You get full browser control, you can handle JavaScript rendering, interact with dynamic elements, fill forms, deal with multi-step flows. But out of the box, a headless Chromium running Playwright has a fingerprint that Cloudflare Turnstile will recognize almost immediately. The TLS handshake pattern, the navigator.webdriver flag, the way the browser reports its rendering capabilities, all of that screams automation.
You need stealth patches on top of it.
You need stealth patches. There's a library called Playwright Extra with a stealth plugin that handles a lot of the obvious tells. Spoofing the WebDriver flag, randomizing canvas fingerprints, patching the Chrome runtime object. And there's a fork called CamaFox that specifically targets Firefox's fingerprint, because Firefox has a more heterogeneous user population, which makes individual instances harder to profile. Oxylabs actually integrates Playwright MCP with their residential proxy layer specifically because you need both pieces, the residential IP and the hardened browser fingerprint, working together.
What does that look like in practice? Like if you're scraping a product catalog from an Israeli retailer running Akamai Bot Manager, walk me through what actually happens at the connection level.
Akamai Bot Manager is doing a sensor data collection. It injects JavaScript that collects about 150 data points before you even submit a request. Mouse movement patterns, keyboard timing if there's been any input, battery status, device memory, the timing of how the page rendered. It then scores that against behavioral models. If you're coming in with a residential IP but a default headless Chromium, the sensor data is going to flag you because the behavioral signals are absent or anomalous. No mouse movement, instant page load interaction, that kind of thing.
The residential IP passes the first checkpoint, and the browser fingerprint fails the second one.
And with a stealth patch Playwright on your home workstation, you've now got a residential IP, a browser that looks like a real Chrome or Firefox install, and if your MCP tool is doing interaction delays and randomized timing, the behavioral signals start to look more plausible. Bright Data's numbers, that 99.95% success rate, that's with their full stack residential IP plus browser fingerprint management. They're not just selling you IPs, they're selling you the whole identity package.
Because the pitch there is essentially, don't worry about any of that. Give us a URL and we'll give you structured data.
The pitch is exactly that, and for a lot of use cases, it's the right answer. Firecrawl handles the JS rendering, it has its own anti-bot infrastructure, and it outputs LLM-ready markdown or JSON. The MCP integration means your agent can call it directly, no browser on your end at all. The trade-off is obvious. You've handed the egress to Firecrawl's infrastructure, which means you've lost your residential IP advantage entirely.
For geo-restricted Israeli sites, Firecrawl just doesn't work by default.
For the geo-restriction layer, no. And for sites that have specifically blocked commercial scraping infrastructure, which Akamai Bot Manager is quite good at doing, Firecrawl's IP pool is going to be recognized. There's a Proxyway piece that maps this out. The managed services are convenient, but they're playing whack-a-mole with bot managers that have already cataloged their egress ranges.
Which brings you back to the home workstation architecture for the hard cases. Your IP isn't in anyone's block list because it's just your home internet connection.
That's the durable advantage. And the 40% reduction in detection rates for residential versus data center IPs, that number comes from studies comparing the two in controlled conditions, and is probably conservative for Israeli sites specifically given how tuned those configurations are.
Where does vision-based scraping fit? Because that feels like a different axis entirely.
It is a different axis. Vision-based tools like Browse AI are not primarily a bot evasion strategy. They're a resilient strategy against site structure changes. Instead of parsing the DOM and writing XPath selectors that break every time the site redesigns, you're telling a model, find the price field and extract it, and it figures out where that is visually. The bot evasion properties are incidental. You still need to actually load the page without getting blocked.
Vision-based is not a substitute for the residential IP and fingerprint layer. It's a layer on top.
It solves a different problem. If you're dealing with a heavily dynamic site where the DOM structure is unpredictable or changes frequently, vision-based extraction is more robust than HTML scraping. But you're also doing a lot more compute per page, you're dependent on the quality of the vision model's interpretation, and you can get hallucinated extractions if the model misreads what it's looking at.
That last one is not a small concern if you're pulling financial data from a utility portal.
No, it is not. A hallucinated meter reading is a bad outcome. For structured data where the fields are consistent and the DOM is stable, HTML scraping with a well-maintained Playwright setup is going to be more reliable and faster. Vision-based makes sense when the structure is unpredictable or when you're dealing with PDFs and rendered documents that don't have clean DOM structure at all.
The honest answer to which tool is Playwright with stealth patches and your residential IP for the hard cases. Firecrawl if geo-restriction isn't the issue, and you want low maintenance, and vision-based as a specific solution for unstructured or frequently changing pages, rather than a general-purpose evasion strategy.
That's the map, yeah? and the maintenance burden is real with the Playwright PEF. Stealth plugins need updating as bot managers patch their detection for known evasion techniques. It's not a set and forget setup. You're committing to a maintenance relationship with the anti-bot arms race.
That's the real cost most people don't account for when they opt for maximum control.
And that cost compounds over time. 6 months in, your Playwright setup is humming along, and then Cloudflare releases a turnstile update that breaks your Canvas fingerprint spoofing. Suddenly, you're debugging at 11 at night because the agent that was supposed to pull your utility bill just returned an empty response.
At which point, the low maintenance argument for Firecrawl starts looking a lot more attractive.
And this is where the self-hosted versus localhost-only comparison gets interesting, because people tend to frame it as a binary. Either you run the full workstation setup, or you're stuck with something that doesn't work. But the actual spectrum is more nuanced than that.
Walk me through the localhost, only end of that spectrum, because Daniel's question specifically calls out people who can't self-host.
The localhost-only scenario is, you're running an MCP server on the same machine where you're sitting, the agent is also local, and you're not exposing anything over a tunnel. You lose the mobile agent calls home workstation dynamic, but you keep the residential IP benefit as long as you're physically at home. For a lot of use cases, that's actually fine. If the workflow is, I need to pull this data regularly and I can schedule it, you don't need the mobile agent piece. You run it from home, you get the residential egress, and you skip the tail scale configuration entirely.
The tunnel architecture is specifically solving the problem of initiating the workflow from somewhere other than home.
The tunnel is not doing anything for the scraping itself, it's just giving the mobile agent a path to the machine that has the residential IP. If you don't need that remote initiation, the tunnel is unnecessary complexity. And removing unnecessary complexity from a system that's already juggling stealth plugins, browser fingerprinting, and proxy routing is valuable.
Let's talk about the legal and ethical layer here, because we touched on it earlier, and I think it deserves more than a passing mention. The legitimate use cases Daniel is describing, utility bills, government data, product catalogs, those are fundamentally different from adversarial scraping. But the technical stack is identical.
The technical stack is identical, and that's exactly why the legal picture is murky. In most jurisdictions, including Israel, accessing data you're authorized to access through automated means is a legal gray area at best. The Computer Fraud and Abuse Act in the United States, the computer law in Israel, they're written around unauthorized access, and the question of whether bypassing a technical restriction constitutes unauthorized access when you're the legitimate account holder is unsettled.
There's a meaningful difference between scraping your own utility account and scraping a competitor's pricing database, but the bot manager on the utility portal doesn't know that.
The terms of service almost certainly prohibit automated access regardless of who you are, which puts you in a situation where you might have the legal right to your own data, but be technically violating the TOES to retrieve it. The EU's data portability provisions under the General Data Protection Regulation push back against this somewhat. There's a principle that you should be able to access your own data in a machine-readable format. Israel's privacy framework has similar underpinnings. But practically speaking, enforcement against individuals accessing their own accounts is essentially non-existent.
The enforcement risk scales with what you're doing with the data and how much of it you're taking.
That's the real calculus. One person pulling their own utility bills through a headless browser is not what Akamai Bot Manager is designed to stop. It's designed to stop coordinated scraping at scale. Price aggregators, account credential stuffers, competitive intelligence operations. The individual legitimate use case is collateral damage from protections aimed at adversarial actors.
Which is a slightly uncomfortable position to be in, but it's the honest framing.
And I think for developers and data scientists thinking about this seriously, the ethical line is pretty clear even if the legal line is blurry. Are you accessing data you have a legitimate right to access? Is the data going to be used in a way the site operator would find reasonable if they knew about it? Those questions tend to produce clear answers for the use cases Daniel is describing. They produce much less comfortable answers for competitive scraping or bulk data harvesting.
Now, Akamai Bot Manager specifically, because you mentioned it in the context of sensor data collection, and I want to understand what the practical impact is on scraping efficiency when you're up against it, versus something like a basic Cloudflare setup.
The gap is significant. A basic Cloudflare configuration with rate limiting and IP reputation scoring, you can get through with a residential IP and reasonable request timing. Akamai Bot Manager is a different class of problem. That sensor data collection I described, the 150 behavioral data points, that runs client-side before your first meaningful request. If you're failing that check, you're not getting a 403, you're getting served a fake response that looks valid. The page loads, the data looks right, and your scraper happily extracts garbage.
That is a particularly nasty design.
It's very effective. Because the naive check for did this work is, did I get a 200 response with content? And Akamai can satisfy both of those while giving you completely wrong data. Scraping B has documented this in their Playwright MCP write-ups. The failure mode isn't a block, it's a silent corruption of the data you think you're collecting.
Which means your validation layer becomes as important as your evasion layer.
If you're building this seriously, you need checksums. You need spot check comparisons against known values. You need anomaly detection on the extracted data. For a utility bill where you know roughly what the previous reading was, that's manageable. For a product catalog with thousands of SKUs, validating that none of the prices have been silently corrupted is a real engineering problem.
The arms race here is not slowing down. The bot managers are getting better. The evasion tools respond, and the cycle continues.
The trajectory is toward behavioral biometrics becoming the primary signal. IP reputation and browser fingerprinting are increasingly table stakes. They're necessary but not sufficient for high-value targets. The next generation of bot detection is going to lean harder on whether your interaction patterns match human behavior at a granular level. Typing cadence, scroll velocity, the micro hesitations before clicking. That's much harder to fake than a canvas fingerprint.
The obvious response from the scraping side is to inject synthetic behavioral signals that mimic human patterns.
Which is already happening. There are libraries that simulate realistic mouse trajectories using Bezier curves that add variable delays based on statistical models of human reaction time. It's an interesting technical problem, essentially trying to pass a continuous Turing test at the browser interaction level, but it also increases the compute and complexity cost of every scrape substantially. You're no longer just loading a page, you're choreographing a performance.
The future of this space is either managed services that absorb that complexity for you, or a much higher maintenance bar for the self-hosted path.
That's where it's heading. The window for Run Playwright with the Stealth plugin and call it done is closing. Not immediately, but the trend is clear. The sites that matter most, government portals, financial services, anything with sensitive data, are going to be running behavioral analysis that makes the browser fingerprint layer look simple by comparison.
Which is a useful thing to know before you invest heavily in an architecture that might be half a step behind the current state of bot detection. If you're building this for the first time right now, what does the decision tree actually look like? Because I think the practical question is where to start, not where the arms race ends up.
The honest starting point is, what is the target site running, and how much of your time are you willing to spend maintaining the setup? Those two variables pretty much determine everything else. If you're going after something with basic Cloudflare rate limiting and a geo restriction, Firecrawl with a residential proxy in front of it gets you most of the way there with almost no maintenance overhead. Firecrawl handles the JavaScript rendering, returns clean structured output, and you're not managing browser instances or stealth plugins. That's your lowest friction path.
If the site is running something heavier, Akamai, Turnstile, the full stack,
then you need Playwright with stealth patches, and you need to accept the maintenance relationship that comes with it. Playwright MCP, through something like the OxyLabs integration, gives you headless browser control with residential egress, and that 40% reduction in detection rates versus data center IPs is real and meaningful. But you're committing to keeping the stealth layer current. That's not optional, it's the cost of admission for the hard targets.
The vision-based approach slots in where the DOM is unpredictable or changes frequently enough that selector-based scraping keeps breaking.
Right, vision isn't your evasion strategy. It's your resilient strategy for pages where the structure is a moving target. Use it for that specific problem. Don't reach for it because you think it sidesteps bot detection, because it doesn't.
For someone who cannot self-host, no always. On machine at home, no willingness to manage a tail scale setup. the local host only path is still viable as long as the use case fits.
It covers more ground than people assume. If your workflow tolerates being scheduled rather than remotely triggered, you run the MCP server locally, you get the residential IP benefit without any tunnel complexity, and you skip a whole category of configuration problems. The limitation is real, but it's not a deal breaker for every use case. Decodo, which was formerly SmartProxy, offers a free MCP server with residential IP support built in. That's worth knowing about if you want the managed end of the spectrum without standing up your own infrastructure.
The actual decision is less what is the best tool and more what is the minimum viable stack for my specific target.
Which is almost always the right frame for infrastructure decisions. Overkill in this space has a real cost, complexity, maintenance, surface area for things to break. Start with the simplest thing that addresses your actual threat model and add layers only when the simpler approach demonstrably fails.
Test your outputs. Given what we said about Akamai serving plausible-looking garbage, building in validation from the start is not optional.
Know what a correct response looks like before you trust the pipeline. For utility data, that's easy. You know the account number, you know the rough magnitude of previous bills. For a product catalog, build a spot check against a small set of known values and flag anomalies before they propagate downstream. The evasion layer and the validation layer are equally important, and most people only think about the first one. But even with those layers, the landscape keeps shifting. What works today might not tomorrow.
And that's what stays with me. How fast the goalposts are moving. The setup Daniel is describing. Tunnel to home, residential egress, MCP layer for browser control. That's a clever architecture right now. But the behavioral biometrics trajectory means the window on clever but simple may be shorter than you'd hope.
That's not a reason not to build it. It's a reason to build it with loose coupling so you can swap components when the threat model changes. The tunnel and the residential IP are durable. The specific stealth plugin you're using in Playwright in 6 months, less so.
The deeper question, which I don't think anyone has a clean answer to, is whether the adversarial dynamic between bot detection and automated access eventually resolves into something more structured. Like, does the industry converge on some kind of credentialed automation standard where you declare, I am a legitimate agent acting on behalf of this account holder, and the site accepts that rather than trying to detect you behaviorally?
There are gestures in that direction. The EU data portability push is one. Some banking APIs have moved toward explicit automation consent frameworks, but for the general web, I think the honest answer is no, not in any near-term horizon. The incentives for sites to remain opaque are too strong. Geo-restrictions in particular are often not about security at all. They're about licensing, regulatory compliance, or just legacy configuration nobody has revisited. Those don't get solved by technical standards.
Which means people building in this space are going to keep navigating a landscape where the rules are unclear, the tools are in constant flux, and the right answer today might be wrong in 18 months.
Welcome to infrastructure work.
There you go. Huge thanks to Hilbert Flemingtop for producing this one, and to Modal for keeping the compute running. Seriously, serverless GPU infrastructure makes this whole pipeline possible. If you've got thoughts on the architecture, the tooling, anything we got wrong or right, leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps people find the show. This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll see you next time.
This episode's script was written by Claude Sonnet 4.6 with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.